Hey, Lily, ever since you took on your new CPO role, you've been doing lots of public appearances. I mean, you did a great talk in Hamburg at the Product at Heart conference, and recently you were on the panel for Women in Product UK's first ever live event. How's that going?
Oh, yeah, that's nice of you to say, even after I did show a bit of a silly picture of us at the talk in Hamburg. But it has been great, although very busy, and I'm definitely resting on my laurels for the rest of the year. I will be hiding away and, well, actually just doing lots of work at BBC Maestro. But the panel was wonderful, and I do have a great story about something we asked the audience.
Wait, hold that thought. I really want to hear that story, but it might be even better if it comes from today's guest, who was also a part of that panel.
Absolutely, that definitely makes sense. If we have the brilliant Namrata Sama here, we should definitely let her tell it. After all, she is also the founder of Women in Product UK. We'll talk to her about that and what she's learned from the group already, but we're also going to get into her experience as CPO, preparing for future exec roles, and what it takes to make the leap from CPO to CEO.
That's a lot of great stuff, Lily. If we're going to have time for all of it, we'd better shut up and get on with our chat with Nam. So let's get to it. The Product Experience is brought to you by Mind the Product. Every week on the podcast, we talk to the best product people from around the globe.
Visit mindtheproduct.com to catch up on past episodes and discover loads of free resources to help you with your product practice. You can also find more information about Mind the Product's conferences and their great training opportunities happening around the world and online.
Create a free account on the website for a fully personalized experience and to get access to the full library of awesome content and the weekly curated newsletter. Mind the Product also offers free Product Tank meetups in more than 200 cities. There's probably one near you.
Hi, Namrata. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today. How are you doing?
Thank you so much, Lily. I'm a little tired, but I'm also excited.
Ah, well, thank you for being here and tired and excited. But before we get stuck into our topic for today, it would be great if you could give us a quick intro to you and how you got into product.
Great. So I've been in product for 12 plus years now. I started my career as a software engineer. So entering product, I think, was a natural progression for me. So it's not a very like amazing story in a way. It's quite conventional. But yeah, once I got into product, I don't think I ever looked back. I've loved every moment of it. So it's been kind of 12 plus years, I think, for me in this industry. And in terms of what I do, I'm currently a chief product officer at a global education company called Into University Partnerships. And previously, I was a CPO at a health tech company called iPlay to Healthcare. And then before that, I've had several leadership roles at media companies, telco, as well as health. So yeah, it's been a mixed bag. And I think I've done every single role that exists in the product world. So right from PM and SPM and head off and, you know, so I've done every single thing. And yeah, it's quite nice now being a CPO. It's stressful, of course, but I think I'm enjoying it.
And we're going to talk a little bit about the kind of the leadership side of things later in the podcast and your next move. But before we move on to that, it'd be great to hear about Women in Product, which you are also the founder of, Women in Product UK.
Absolutely. So Women in Product, I started it in 2020, actually, in the middle of the pandemic, the lockdowns. And the reason being that, of course, the events kind of got very quiet that year. There were no events, no in-person events. There were a lot of digital events. And I just realized there were not that many communities focused on women or women in product specifically. And that's the reason I started the community. I started as a LinkedIn group, I think, as just how all of us do. and then LinkedIn is not very good for, it's not very interactive generally. For engagement, I don't think it's the perfect platform. So I moved it. I mean, I kept the LinkedIn group. Then I also started a Facebook group with the same name. And actually, the Facebook group got a lot of traction, a lot of good chats and support. And then a lot of members actually came to me and said, you know, we need something a bit more personal. So WhatsApp was recommended actually by a lot of members. And I kept kind of delaying that because I was so busy. And as you know, WhatsApp groups can be full on. it can be a lot of work. So I just, I kind of delayed it. And then last year, I think around December, like end of December, I started the WhatsApp group. And it just kind of exploded in terms of popularity. And a lot of members brought in other members, you know, their friends and colleagues and things like that. And then recently we had a flagship event in June. And I think that event just kind of made things even more, you know, rapid, really, in terms of membership. So we acquired, I think, a few hundreds probably overnight. And currently we are 1,500 plus members. And yeah, it's doing very well, actually, in terms of engagement. It's highly engaging. The WhatsApp group is buzzing all the time. But even the LinkedIn, there's a lot of high quality conversations that happens there. And I think as a founder, I feel quite, I feel really proud, I think. So we've created something quite amazing.
Nam, I'm a huge proponent of communities. I've founded a few. I'm an active participant in others. Tell me, why are communities, especially things like this, communities of practice in this field, why are they so important?
I think it's a support network and it's also a safe place. Because product roles are quite, first of all, it's quite tough. It doesn't matter what level of product role you're doing. And secondly, you know, it's still quite a new discipline. I mean, I hate to say that, but it is quite new. It's still quite new in spite of all these years. And when something is new, there is, it's quite exciting, but at the same time, it can also be confusing for a lot of people because a lot of our peer groups might not actually understand what product managers actually do. And when they don't understand, there are a lot of questions. There are awkward questions as well, you know. And I think as a product community, the only way we can spread the word really is by, of course, educating people around us, but also being closer to each other as a community. Because, you know, as a community, I feel we are very strong. I also feel product people are generally more helpful to each other than other kind of, you know, I don't want to name names, but, you know, this is just my own, you know, view that I think product communities tend to be quite close in general. And, you know, we all need a safe place to talk, to kind of share notes and things like that. So I feel that's the reason product communities are generally successful. But also, you know, the thing is engagement is also up and down. It's seasonal sometimes, right? If you do an event, as a follow-up to an event, your group will be buzzing because it's just right after the event. But then after that, so what? How do you keep it engaging consistently? So I think that's the biggest challenge if you're running a community. It is not about creating a community that's buzzing initially, but it's also about the consistency. Like how often are people sharing their views and comments and things like that? So it has to be consistent, I guess. That's the secret.
And I suppose one of the questions that I had for you, because I know that you're quite active in lots of communities as well as having founded Women in Product UK. So what makes a community, a product community, more successful one over the other? Like you mentioned engagement, yeah. But what kind of drives that engagement?
I think definitely the quality of people, I would say, is also very important. So in terms of... I think, again, if you have a hidden agenda, generally, I feel like the community might not work if there is a hidden agenda behind the conversations. But if people are honest, they really are in the community because they want to share their learnings and equally want to learn from others. I think if there is an honest reason why they are there, you will see naturally, you know, those kind of communities grow organically quite fast. And they stick together, you know, for a long time as well. So I would say, again, safety, trust, these things are very important. I also think there is that kind of unspoken thing where, you know, we all, like, I've never made any rules in a community that, okay, whatever we speak here, don't go outside. I never say those things. But I think there is that trust, again, that whatever we speak in this group, you know, we don't, you know, not necessarily that we'll share everywhere else. So there is a reason why people are in that group. And I think that's very, very important. And again, you know, resources and learning, and there's so much noise out there, as you know, like especially in product world, there are like a million product courses and this and that, especially the content world, I feel is very noisy. So a good community, a high quality community can also help in kind of filtering through the noise. In terms of recommendations, like, you know, what is the best strategy course out there, for example? And if you have a trusted group of people who tells you something or recommends something, people are more keen to kind of buy into that, you know? So I think these are some of the things that keeps a community quite strong.
Now, just to get the question out of the way quickly, you're creating a safe space. It's called Women in Product UK.
Yes.
Can you create a safe space if you also allow men to join in this particular community?
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, it's obviously, it's meant for women. But again, I've always clearly mentioned in the LinkedIn page and Instagram page as well that allies and sponsors are always welcome. So if you are a strong ally of women in product, of course, you're welcome. Actually, the WhatsApp group does have a few men. I don't think they're very active in terms of posting or commenting, but they are there. We welcome them. You know, it's the same thing for our events as well. Men are definitely welcome. We are not banning anyone. We are super inclusive.
Can I ask? It's one thing for someone like me to say I'm an ally. What does it mean? From your perspective, what does it mean to be an ally?
So I'll give you a great example, actually. You know, when we had the first event, which was a few months ago, a lot of men actually reached out for two things. First was exactly what you asked. So the question was, are we allowed? Like, the next time you do an event, can we come? And my answer was obviously a yes. The second thing was, a lot of men actually came up to me and said, you know, my team has three women who are, you know, product managers. Can they join your group? Can I share them the link with them? And honestly, that exactly is what allyship is. That exactly is what sponsorship is. And to be honest, the people who sent me those messages probably don't even, I'm not sure if they knew what they were doing when they were doing that, right? But this is what they did. They became the biggest sponsor of the female product managers in their team and the biggest ally, you know? And that's the kind of example, like that's the kind of leadership I think we want to see more and more. From the men out there. And that's happening now, you know. So a lot of my friends who are head ofs or CPOs, they are sending their, you know, the female members of their team to Women in Product to join and to get value out of it. And I think it's so amazing to see that.
Yeah, and it's so great that kind of follows through then to just advocating for that professional development for the women in their team and supporting them in developing in their careers. I had a question kind of along the same lines of this, of like, obviously you now know 1,500 women in product.
Yeah.
And probably even more than that.
There's more than that.
And you chat to women in product all the time. So I'm curious to know, in your experience and all the knowledge that you've gained in the conversations that you have, like, are there specific barriers that you see in the way of professional development? Maybe they're not specific to women, but, you know, what are people asking advice for? What are the barriers that people are trying to overcome?
First of all, I think Lily and Randy, for both of you, I think we are very lucky, I feel, because when we started in product, we didn't have to invest that much in our learning. I mean, now if you look at an average PM spending so much money on different subscriptions, they've got a Reforge, they've got Maven, they've got this and that. And honestly, I never had any of that when I started. They didn't exist, basically, you know. So first of all, I think it's quite expensive now to be to be a product manager, and equally expensive to kind of keep growing, you know, because you have to keep kind of investing in yourself, because there's, you know, the speed of... there's so many things changing all the time in technology, right? So that is one thing that I see. There's a lot of chatter, a lot of talks about learning resources. I think that's probably one of the topmost topic being discussed on a daily basis. There's a lot of discussions on product strategy, you know, roadmaps, OKRs, the usual lot. And what I feel is, again, learning a course or taking a course is one thing, but again, applying that is the real challenge. I think that's a real test. And from what I can see is, I think a lot of people have learned, like they have taken the lessons, they have done these courses, but there's not that many people guiding them to apply that knowledge in their day-to-day, you know? And I think that's the biggest challenge. So somewhere as leaders, we are probably failing along the way, I feel, because there's a lot of PMs now in the pipeline. But then if you look at who's actually mentoring them, Well, actually, nobody in a way, you know. Peer mentoring helps, you know. But again, if they had good leaders who would guide them and actually teach them how to do things, things might get better. So I feel like the biggest challenge is really leadership, getting that mentoring and coaching from their leaders. I just think people are too busy now. No one has time. I think there is good intent. People really want to help others. It's not like they don't. But no one really has time. And now with the kind of virtual world that we live in, everybody's full on. We have meetings back to back in the diaries. Maybe that is to be blamed as well. But definitely learning and development is the number one topic that I see on a daily basis.
And I suppose that's where the community is like so important, because then you can learn from your peers and get support from your peers if that support isn't available from the leadership in your business.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Like I've got members who would be, let's say, drafting their strategy, you know, and they would then get it peer reviewed by another PM or another head of, you know. Again, it's first of all fascinating to see the level of trust in between two people. And secondly, that's exactly why they are in that community, because they get that peer reviews, they get all of that done. And then sometimes these people are from completely unrelated sectors, you know, so there is no competition. And I think that's the best part. You know, when there is no competition, people are automatically more open to each other. And that's what I'm seeing currently.
So I heard a story about something that happened at your first event where you asked people at the beginning if they could imagine being a CPO. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
I did not come prepared with the stats, unfortunately. But yes, we did that. It was really fun. So we did a Slido and we started the event with a question. So it was myself and Tiama and Vivian and, of course, Lily yourself. It was a great panel, first of all. And so the question we asked was, you know, do you see yourself as a CPO? And I think, I don't know, what was the answer? Like 30% said yes, I think, right? I think it was quite a low number. A majority said no, or like maybe, not sure. You know, those were the kind of answers we got. And then in that 1 hour, I think we spoke more than an hour. We spoke for like 90 minutes, I guess, right? So after 90 minutes, we decided to ask the same question again to the same audience. And it was 60% yes.
That's fantastic.
I know.
I don't know if there's that many CPO jobs available, but it's still fantastic that everyone wants it.
By then, yeah, well, you know, there could be like, you know, this. Yeah, I mean, there could be in a few years' time. I mean, there should be, right? That's our ambition, to grow this discipline and have the C-suite role for product, right? But it was so good to see that within a matter of 90 minutes, after hearing our kind of unfiltered stories, I guess, you know, a lot of people were really, I think they were really motivated to go for it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I loved that event because in the stories that we were telling, like you say, it was really unfiltered. Like we were being very real with our journeys that we'd been on and the struggles that we'd had, like in the lead up to those roles and actually in those roles. And I was really worried when we were talking, because I was like, are we going to put people off? But actually, I think it just made it so much more accessible to the audience and made it feel like it could be something that could be part of their story and part of their journey as well, which was so great to see.
I mean, the kind of feedback we received was just phenomenal. Like there were a few like aspiring or kind of young, you know, new PMs, let's say, who came up to me and said, it's the first time I've actually seen four CPOs in flesh and blood. Like, you know, they've never actually seen four CPOs so up close and personal. And for them, that was the biggest takeaway from that event. And again, as we were chatting, I think it was completely unscripted, unfiltered. And we actually decided not to record the event for a reason, because we wanted it to be like that. There was no streaming. We didn't stream it live, or we didn't even record anything. So I think that meant that the conversation was, you know, very free flowing, very open. And actually the audience got a lot of value out of it.
Mm. Well, I'm so pleased that you're going to be continuing with all of the Women in Product UK events. And I'm sure if there are people who want to set up franchises in different countries, you would be more than happy to have a word with them, because we have a global audience here on the podcast. So,
oh, brilliant, brilliant, absolutely.
So, in a similar vein, then, you kind of mentioned about CPOs. You've held a few CPO roles in your time, and I'm interested to know, in your experience, like, do they differ much between different companies?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's completely different. These are very different roles. And, you know, my first CPO role was actually in 2020 during the pandemic. And I joined a health tech company during, you know, during COVID, basically. So it was just fascinating, but also very hectic, as you can imagine, because we were working with NHS primary care. So working with the whole vaccine rollout and all of that jazz. Very, very interesting times. And, you know, smallish company, 100 employees, SaaS business, but also B2C. So there's, you know, two types of products in the company, but quite a small company. And I think I would say, of course, I had product design data reporting into me. But again, it was quite simple in many ways. I mean, it's a complex sector. Healthcare is super complicated. But in terms of the team dynamics and stakeholders, it was much, much, much simpler than what I do today, what I do now at Intu, which is a global education company. We work with universities in the UK, US, Australia. And I've got so many different stakeholders. You know, there's so many different teams involved in what we do. And it's completely global. We exist in more than 26 different markets, 26 different countries. And it's a completely global team as well. And that comes with its complexities. And in this role, I look after product design, data, market research, insights, community, CRM. I can go on and on. And into startup as well. We've got a startup accelerator. So it's a very, very broad role, actually, you know. And some could argue it's not even a CPO role. It's more than that. We just don't know what to call it. So we're still calling it a CPO role. I would say it's so different from my previous role. It's a step up in many ways, but it's also very broad in terms of the remit. So I would say, yes, the role is very different. It's not the same. And probably somebody who works, I don't know, a CPO of, I don't know, Adobe might have a completely different view because they might be doing a completely different role. And it might still be called a CPO role, you know? So it's just, I think that's the beauty of this role. That's also sometimes the danger because a role is just not standardized, you know? Mm-hmm. So I would say, yeah, it's so different. It's so fascinating. And that's probably the reason we love it.
Hey, listener, do you fancy leveling up your product management skills and are you ready to take that next step in your product career?
If you do, you're in luck. Mind the Product runs regular interactive remote product management training workshops where you can dedicate 2 half days to honing your skills with a small group of product peers.
You'll be coached through product challenges by an expert trainer and you'll walk away with frameworks and tools you can use right away.
I really like the idea of 2 individual half days. There's lots of time in between to decompress and process all of the day's light bulb moments. Clever.
The Mind the Products training courses are available right now, and you can choose from Product Management Foundations, Communication and Alignment, Metrics for Product Managers, and Mapping to Solve Product Problems.
You can find out more and book your place at mindtheproduct.com/workshops. Nam, you're obviously an ambitious and busy person. I'm curious, which direction do you see your future in? Do you want to go towards that CPO of Adobe or other large company? Do you see yourself in a different executive role? How are you preparing for that future?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great question, Randy. And I think, sadly, the answer, even I don't know the answer. I think it's the opportunities, right? And if the world was more, I don't know, static and less volatile, and, you know, there were no recessions and we could pick our jobs, of course, I would have said, yes, I think the next role would probably be a CPO of a really large listed organization. I think that would have been the dream. But I think in the current market and just how the market has been, I would say in the last 12 plus months, it's quite hard to predict. But ideally, I think my next role would either be a CPO of a larger company than where I'm now, or I might even try out something different, I would say. So I could join as an MD of a company, maybe even a CEO of a slightly smaller organization. So there are different routes. I mean, I haven't decided. I don't think any of us can decide, to be honest. It really depends on the market and where the demand is. But I'll definitely, you know, I'd like to do something different next time around, I think.
I agree that you can't decide on what role you're definitively going to have, but you can decide in the opposite direction. You can rule yourself out by not keeping yourself open to it. So how do you prepare yourself for that? How do you put yourself in the best position to look at these different possibilities?
You know, I mean, the thing is, I have had chats with so many different people, founders, CEOs, and then every time I speak to them, they always ask me, are you starting your own thing? You know, and of course, I've started Women in Product. It's, you know, it's not, it's more of a passion project for me, to be honest. It's not a real business. But then I have started something. Let's see where that goes. But I get that question from a lot of people asking, when are you starting your own thing? And people just assume that I will be starting my own thing. or there's a lot of people who say, you know, you should go for the CEO role. And that comes very often, actually. A lot of people have said that to me. And yeah, I think, you know, again, I'm quite, you know, I am quite ambitious for sure. I also think as CPOs, we have a unique role to play in an organization because, you know, our job is tough, and it's tough because we have so many different stakeholders and we have a very broader view of the organization and the problems that any company faces, I think, you know, because we touch upon every single thing in the company. And I think that really empowers us to take those big jobs, I would say, you know. So from my perspective, the CPO to CEO, the jump, it's not that big. It's not that big a jump, I would say, you know. So just from my perspective, I think that's not impossible. But again, in terms of preparation, I guess, you know, from my perspective, I speak to a lot of current CEOs who are CEOs of, let's say, small companies or large or even, you know, very large companies, and just try to understand how their day-to-day looks like what keeps them awake in the night. Is it anything similar to what the kind of life I have today, or is it completely different? Because then it'll be a huge jump, right? And fortunately, you know, whenever I speak to them, I think the kind of things that keeps them awake in the night are very similar to kind of the kind of things that keeps us awake at night. Us, when I say us, I mean CPOs. So it's very similar. It's generally growth. It's generally EBITDA. It's generally scale, just kind of, you know, diversifying a business or expanding to multiple, you know, in different markets. I mean, that's exactly the kind of thing CPOs discuss as well. And that's the kind of challenges we have as CPOs. So I feel that the kind of the problems are very similar. And yeah, I think it's just about how the board looks at us, really. I think that is the biggest challenge. You know, do boards and shareholders, do they see us as the successor to the CEO? I don't have the answer.
And you've talked there a lot about how transferable the skills are from CPO to CEO. But is there anything, like for me, when I think about my career journey, like I have that kind of CEO role somewhere there in the distant future for sure. Like I've got my eyes open for that. But is there anything that's kind of missing from the CPO skills and kind of area of expertise that is very definitively CEO land that that needs to be, you know, needs to be kind of addressed?
Absolutely. And this is what I generally, you know, when I speak at a lot of different conferences every year, at least 5 or 6, maybe even more every year. And this is what I always tell the conference producers, you know, the people who are curating these topics for the conferences, is that change the topics, really. Because if you look at a CPO summit or a CPO conference, let's say, you know, just look at the agenda. You know, we are still talking about OKR setting. We're still talking about high performance team. We're still talking about roadmaps, you know, but then actually, if you want to really go to the CEO role, I think the whole conversation has to be profit margins, EBITDA, P&L, how to build a good business, a solid, sustainable business. That really should be the discussion, you know. And sometimes I feel product people, CPOs or even VP of products, we are a little bit away from that land because we are very often very delivery focused. That's just historically the roles have been, right? We live quarter by quarter in a way because our roadmaps are like that. So, and that we are just bound to be that way. And I think that's the biggest blocker in a way, because I think for us, we have to keep the eye on the long term. We have to keep thinking about the business benefits and how to grow a healthy business. And that's just not what a typical CPO does even now, you know? And that is what I think is the biggest blocker, because we should be thinking in that direction.
Now, traditionally, a lot of CEOs come up through sales, and obviously product and sales have an interesting history in most places. What would you say about that? How is developing sales skills something that's on your radar or something you'd recommend for people who are trying to move in this direction?
No, absolutely. And I would actually say that, you know, it's kind of a bit random. Like, let's say in a company example, you know, let's say, I'm the CPO and then all of a sudden I want to grow my skill set. So I'm going to the CCO or CRO and saying, hey, can you add me in sales calls? That might sometimes look very random and actually radical in many ways, right? And then, as you said, sales and product has anyway a very interesting relationship in general. So you don't want to spoil that relationship further by meddling into sales, right? But I think one way of kind of developing some of these skills is it's like side hustles and things like that. You know, if you want a side project, you know, like the way I have started, and I'm pretty sure all of us have a little side hustle somewhere. I think the side hustles are brilliant ways of developing that commercial or sales skills. Because, you know, you're bound to do partnerships, sponsorships, and all those kind of discussions with partners, right? I mean, that's the way you develop those kind of skills. But also sitting in different boards as NEDs or advisory roles, because then you get a much broader perspective, you know? So I think those side gigs that we do, even though we always call them side gigs as if it's not important, sometimes those can teach real skills, real business skills, which can actually help with our real gigs as well. So I would say I would really highly recommend having, you know, developing those skills on the side as much as we can. And also just, you know, if you're a CPO and you're not in the board, you're not invited to board meetings, let's say, or you're not in those P&L discussions, and you know, I would say demand that level of discussion. Say that, listen, I'm developing the products of this company. I need to be in that room. I need to know if we are a loss-making company, I need to know why we are making losses and how can I help the company, in making it profitable and stuff like that. Because if you don't do that, you'll always be seen as a delivery function, you know, which will not solve this problem. And actually recently, I have to tell you this because someone said to me that, you know, I mean, recently, if you look at, just around us in media, I think the CPO role has got a lot of bad PR over the last few months, right? A lot of CPO roles have been cut in different companies. I mean, there's recent that Airbnb, the whole thing about PMs and whatnot. I mean, there's a lot of bad PR around at the moment for product people. And I think, you know, somebody asked me, like, you know, why is this happening? You know, a lot of companies are actually cutting the CPO role completely. They are, you know, they have VP roles, but they don't have C-suite roles for product anymore. And how can we change that? And my response always is, this is exactly why you need more CEOs who come from product backgrounds than sales backgrounds. You know, because if you are a CEO who's an ex-salesperson, of course your proximity is more towards the, you know, sales team, because you understand what they do, you're passionate about it because you've been a salesperson, right? So similarly, if you imagine if more and more CEOs come from product backgrounds, they will be more close to the product team actually and the CPO, you know? So it's like a virtuous cycle which we can easily create if we want to. But for that, you will have to see more and more CPOs, you know, jumping into that big CEO role. Because if this continues, you know, currently I would say 90% of companies, as you said, Randy, the CEOs come from sales, marketing, even legal, from what I have seen. So it's very different, right, the backgrounds. And if that continues, then it doesn't matter how much we talk about product-led growth, product will still be always seen as just a side function.
I think that's so interesting. And I have at least three like good kind of connections of mine that in the last 12 months have moved from CPO or kind of VP product roles into a CEO or MD role. So I think there's definitely a trend there. It feels like there's a trend there just with my yeah. small kind of community that I'm connected to of people moving into those CEO roles, which is great to see. And I hope that it's a trend that continues as well.
Fingers crossed.
Nam, it's been so great to talk to you. I'm going to take us all the way back to the beginning and ask you, what advice do you wish you'd had when you started your career in product or when you were kind of, you know, developing into those early leadership roles?
Oh, I think, I don't know. I think just, so I'm, you know, I like to move things very fast. You know, speed is like my second name, which is sometimes a problem for me and for others. For others, because, you know, not every company moves in that kind of speed, whether you like it or not. And problem for me, because again, you know, I like to move very fast, but then if the culture of the company doesn't support it, that frustrates me, you know? So I would say, I think, if somebody would have said that to me, that kind of, you know, go slow or just kind of tweak your speed as per the company's style and culture, I think that would have been great. I mean, I've learned that lesson now, but I have learned that by burning myself. I think that's an important lesson.
Amazing. Thank you so much for joining us. It's been so great talking to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Lily. The pleasure is mine.
Thanks, Nam.
Thank you, Randy.
The Product Experience is the first
and the best
podcast from Mind the Product. Our hosts are me, Lily Smith,
and me, Randy Silver.
Lou Ron Pratt is our producer and Luke Smith is our editor.
Our theme music is from Hamburg-based band POW, that's P-A-U. Thanks to Arnie Kittler, who curates both Product Tank and MTP Engage in Hamburg, and who also plays bass in the band, for letting us use their music. You can connect with your local product community via Product Tank, regular free meetups in over 200 cities worldwide.
If there's not one near you, maybe you should think about starting one. To find out more, go to mindtheproduct.com/producttank.